season 3 of the Johnny and Josh Show, the most inappropriately named podcast, given that it's Johnny, Josh, Big Dave and Eric. The boys are back on our 25th anniversary of the legendary show that was Channel 5 Baseball, which, would you believe it, aired on the 1st of April, 1997, for the first time. God. For those of you that were around, that were a part of it, it's lovely to have you still on board on the podcast. But most important of all, how lovely is it to have the boys back? JC, Eric, Big Dave, we haven't spoken for 5 months because in reality, none of us like each other. What have you been up to?
Goldie, I thought I was coming on an episode of Radio Bath. I thought you were going to play some Who or something.
Have you been listening in? Have you been able to get the international feed?
No. You told us you don't like us. So, you know, why would you listen to your show?
Can I tell you something? Should I be firing my agent? I mean, I still don't have my name on this podcast and I still turn up.
So for those of you who don't know, by the way, Johnny does have a new radio, has a new radio show. But it's in, where is it again? It's not even Bath. It's like North Bath Radio.
Excuse me. It's Radio Bath. It covers the whole of Bath and some of Wiltshire. No, it's not just the North. It's local radio. It's a labor of love.
North Norfolk radio, right?
It's 1,000 watts coming at you.
Eric, Norfolk is nowhere near Bath. What on earth are you talking about?
It's an Alan Partridge reference. It's even hilarious. I ran over your head.
We're super happy for you, and we're hoping that you're going to win Comeback Player of the Year.
Oh, thank you. No idea what that means, but thank you. Very kind.
Johnny, you're chewing gum. We're doing a podcast. You're chewing gum. I'm sure you don't do that on Radio Bath. Exactly. Are you taking this seriously?
Are you kidding me?
North Bath.
The beauty of radio is that you could dress, you could turn up in your onesie and nobody's
chewing gum. The one thing you can't do is chew gum.
Of course you can, as long as you speak normally and it's not impacting. It's not a problem.
Chomp, chomp, chomp.
Move on. Eric, what did you want to say?
Basically, it's good to see you guys again. We have a lot to discuss. Because, it has been a while since we were all together, since the World Series, and a lot of things have happened in episode one here, Johnny.
Episode one, of course, you will remember my much favored biblical reference, boys, show. What? This is important.
This is like proselytizing.
David, the most common interpretation of one is it that represents a new beginning.
Oh, great.
Okay, and this is a new beginning.
That means we're doing this podcast again?
No, we're restarting a new season, season 3. So get ready for a new chapter in life after encountering number one. Not only that, what does it symbolize? Well, not surprisingly, the number one is generally treated as a symbol of unity, which doesn't seem to apply to this podcast. No. Therefore, in monotheistic religions, I'm assuming that means where there's only one God. JC, would you like to clarify?
Yeah, which God is that out? I mean, you worked on all the syllables for that one.
I was struggling with it, but brilliant. It often symbolized God or the universe. Now, I don't want to suggest that I am the universe, but as we all know, the world
certainly
does
not
center
God.
Around
me.
I'll second Josh's line there. He beat me to it.
Anyway, that's my biblical reference. I'm done. That's all the research I've done. Move on.
Okay, moving on.
Notable number ones. Sorry, I suddenly realized I'm the presenter here. I'm meant to be the glue that holds this
together. Please,
I'm going to move you on. Notable number ones. For those of you that remember from season one and two, we love to do that in reference to the episode, and this is episode one. Pee Wee Reese, Ozzie Smith, Richie Ashburn, Billy Martin, not exactly world beaters. And this one really. Well, I mean,
those
they're
like
not, you know,
four Hall of Famers.
Oh, they may be Hall of Famers, but they're not up there with the Mickey Mantles and the Babe
Ruths. Billy Martin is not Hall of Famer.
But do you know why, Goldie? You know why they were all number ones, those guys, what they all have in common?
Because they're old.
That makes no sense whatsoever, and it's the wrong answer, of course. Well, the uniforms were originally supposed to delineate what position you were in the batting lineup. The original number ones were leadoff guys, so they were table setters. Yeah. And so it became sort of a tradition that you'd have like your middle infielder, your Ozzie Smiths, your Pee Wee Reeses, who would take on that number.
Okay. But that doesn't stop them from being great players. I mean, you know, Ichiro was a table setter.
You're saying that because Ozzie Smith is not Mickey Mantle.
I didn't badmouth him. I simply said they're not up there with the Mickey Mantles of this
but
world,
they
the
are.
Absolute
they
super,
are in
super
a different
superstars.
Way. Mickey Mantle, who could barely run around the outfield with his busted knees, could have never played shortstop the way I
stick with the number ones here.
Okay. Man. Well, look, I've not even mentioned the last one in the list who completely and utterly does not deserve a mention, and that is the former commissioner of MLB, Mr. Bud Selig. was a notable.
Did he wear number one on the used car lot in Milwaukee or wherever it was?
I believe he was playing for the Brewers at the time.
The Brewers. When he retired from being commish of Major League Baseball, the Milwaukee Brewers decides to retire number one in his honor because he was actually the original founder of the Brewers who managed to lure the Seattle Pilots away back.
Steal.
Yeah, that's it. You know, because can I be real? Give him credit. Bud Selig did spend 5 years trying to fill the void of the Boston Braves, the Braves leaving Milwaukee to Atlanta. Which were formerly, of course, the Milwaukee Braves. So eventually he got the Milwaukee Brewers off the ground and then became commissioner years later.
And to be real, as much as we may be poo-pooing Bud Selig, his leadership perhaps better than the current MLB leadership.
I agree. In my humble opinion, I agree with you, Josh Chetwynd.
Well, the bar isn't exactly high.
That's like saying that, Dave is a better pundit than JC. I mean, when the bar's that low, it's hardly a compliment.
Stalin or Hitler?
Exactly.
Stalin was so much better than Hitler, I swear.
I think we're going down a path we need to stop right now.
It got dark quickly.
Okay, let's have a COVID update. We used to love our COVID. Well, we didn't exactly love our COVID update, but it became a comfortable part of season one and two. Are we actually back to normal? What's happening over the pond?
Eric, I thought you were going to talk. Are we talking about the United States, or are we talking about Canada?
Well, that's where Major League Baseball tends to occur.
It's in Canada as well. I don't know if you realize this, but there's
one team
in
one out of 30 hardly counts.
God, it's chippy in here. Wow. Jeez.
So what is happening? Are there any impacts? Are there any controls?
Things have been tremendously opened up. There were certain rules about people who are working in government and what they're allowed to do. There was a limitation, David Wright, in New York for quite a while that now has been lifted that could have impacted baseball.
Correct. Anybody privately employed had to be vaccinated in the city of New York. So unless Mayor Adams lifted that, you could have been looking at quite a few Mets and Yankees being unable to play, similar to Kyrie Irving, who couldn't play home games for the Nets or on the road with the Knicks.
Can I ask a question, Dave? Do those unvaccinated players who are now allowed to play in the state of New York, are they required to be tested?
No.
So they have the same rules as the vaccinated players?
Correct. As far as I know. As far as I know, they're now on equal footing, which caused a lot of controversy in New York because a lot of some privately owned and some public folks who were mandated to be vaccinated were now complaining, and rightly so, that, rich millionaire sports stars and performers have a loophole, and some of the people lost their jobs because they didn't want to get vaccinated.
And I think they have a fair point, buddy.
And I'm just thoroughly befuddled that there's still people out there who haven't been vaccinated.
Well, that's a different story, but yeah.
That's part of it too, right? That we still have players out there who think that they don't
need Aaron Judge never commented. Yeah. I find it odd. I always found it odd that people were willing some people were willing to say they were vaccinated, and people who weren't vaccinated were not willing to say that they weren't. Like, we know you are not vaccinated if you don't admit it. We get it, guys. It's not hard to figure out.
And for the record, by the way, you look quadruple vaxxed. Thank you very much. So my vaccine passport's all up to date.
But that's because you're old and vulnerable.
Oh, thanks very much.
Take advantage of him.
Goldie, go back to Radio Bath. Seriously, buddy. You're just trying North to crush Bath. Everyone.
Hey, I'm not poo-pooing. I'm triple vaccinated and proud. I wear that badge with honor, but I just don't know how Eric got the fourth one. He's jumped
because I got it. My vaccination passport is updated, and I'm off to, by the way, just for a little off-piste here, I'm off to in the month of May to the, I'm in charge of the World Ice Hockey Championships in Finland.
Whoa! And, congratulations, buddy.
And the government of Finland say that you're not allowed to enter the country unless your previous vaccination was in 6 months upon arrival.
Wow! So you had to have that.
So I had to have a fourth jab. So because it was going to expire while I was in.
Did you have Finland. To pay for that, or could you just order that on the National Health? Just as a matter of interest.
I don't know.
Moving
on.
The National Health Service.
Well, just before we do move on. Am I not right in saying that Canada have a different approach? My understanding is that though the Canadian border is open, unvaccinated MLB players will not be allowed to play in Canada. Is that still the case, Eric?
That's correct. As it stands, at the time of recording, any unvaccinated MLB players will not be allowed into Canada, which means that players like Bryce Harper and, as David mentioned, Aaron Judge. And Chris Sale, who's injured anyway, he will not be able to play against the Blue Jays. Now, Aaron Boone went on record saying, you know, the Blue Jays have a bit of an unfair advantage here with this law. And
vaccinated.
Laws are laws. You know, like,
exactly. Exactly. So can we assume from that the whole team of the Blue Jays are vaccinated?
That is Canadian regulations, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, guess what, guys? If you like to have a punt on baseball, I'm punting the Blue Jays to win every home game. Big time.
They're juiced with vaccinations.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, look, for those of you that are listening to our first broadcast of season 3 of the Johnny and Josh Show with Dave and Eric on the side, but not named, it's lovely to have your company. And obviously, we want you to get involved across the social media platforms, basically because none of us understand how they work. That is, of course, the Johnny and Josh Show on Facebook. We've got Twitter. Do click, put like, subscribe, whatever you have to do. What do you have to do?
Yeah, click like, thing, and don't forget we're on YouTube as well. Well, obviously, the season 3 is yet to be on YouTube, but you can look at archive of season 1 and 2 on our YouTube channel and see how fabulous we all look in our old age.
How much we've aged in one season. Yeah, absolutely. So do get involved. Now, in time-honored tradition, Eric's trivia question. Have you got one for week 1? Have you had time to do sort
I
that
do.
Out?
I do. And you know what?
I've been studying all winter.
Eric's trivia, the stumper of the week, of the month, or whatever you want to call it, it's all about the immaculate inning. Now, for those who don't know what the immaculate inning is, I'll let Josh Cohen explain because he's more eloquent than I.
Yeah, I mean, it's an instance in which the pitcher throws 9 pitches, all strikes, and strikes out 3 batters.
That's right. So it's very rare to see an immaculate inning. I think back to 1994 when I was at the Olympic Stadium in Montreal and I saw Mel Rojas striking out the side in 9 pitches, 3 strikeouts.
Wow.
And 3 batters against the New York Mets. And I said, wow, I saw a bit of history there. I saw the immaculate.
Yeah, but it was the New York Mets, so it doesn't really count. Does it?
Well, then he came to the Mets and he screwed the Mets in a different way. But yes. Yeah, go on.
Now, my question to you, gentlemen, is, which pitcher holds the record for most immaculate innings?
Oh, that's a good one.
Getting 1 is impressive, 2 incredible, but you know, more than 2, even more impressive. So is it A, Max Scherzer? Or is it B, Chris Sale? Or is it C, Kenley Jansen? Good last name.
Wait, this is active.
What's that?
These guys are active.
They're all active.
Is it just they happen to be amongst the career leaders, or this is amongst active players, was the question?
Because David's been studying.
Yeah.
Both. So it just so happens that the leader is active. Okay.
But that makes sense
because everybody strikes out now. Yeah. So I guess that makes a lot of sense.
So which of these players, Max Scherzer, Chris Sale, or Kenley Jansen, holds the record for most immaculate innings pitched?
Good question.
Answer later on in the show.
Well, I enjoyed that. But let's move things on into our first batter of the show, and that is, of course, the news roundup. Right, where to begin? Since we were last here, and it's lovely to have your company, by the way, if you're listening into our season 3, episode 1. It's so great to have you back. And just in case you missed the stop at the top of the podcast, we're not 100% sure how regular this is. It'll definitely be once a month. So just keep across the social media platforms to make sure you know when the next episode is coming. We're going to start, first of all, with the rule changes for 2022. So just to reel through the key ones, automatic runner will start on second base in extra innings. Obviously, that was a development a couple of years back. Doubleheaders will be back to 9 innings, not 7 innings, as they have been for the last 2 seasons. This is the biggie. Universal DH, so now the National League as well as the American League. Pitchers can remain in the batting order after they are replaced on the mound, though, and this is obviously the Ohtani rule. So those are the key rule changes for 2022. JC, I'm happy that the automatic runner will start on second base in extra innings, because there was talk that they were going to do away with that one. I was a big fan of that. What's your thoughts across the board with all those other rule changes?
So sort of my lodestar philosophy about any sort of changes is, you know, I have a little bit of the traditionalist vibe to myself, but really ultimately, does it enhance strategy? Does it make the game more strategically interesting? So I'm okay with the ghost runner. I actually think it does still make it interesting. I know that both the players and ownership like it, shortens up the games, but it creates a little more excitement. The universal DH, I'm never going to be a fan of, because again, I feel like the DH does not increase the strategy piece at all. I like that they've created the Ohtani loophole so that, or closed the Ohtani loophole so that, you know, if he pitches, leaves, he can remain as DH. That does make sense. So good on that. Okay on the ghost runner. I'm just never going to be a DH fan. It's just me.
And doubleheaders back to nine innings. You happy with that from seven?
I am. I mean, again, just, you know, it's a full game. Nine innings is what Major League Baseball is meant to be.
Yeah. Dave, you agree with JC?
On most of those, yeah. I mean, the ghost runner has been a lot of fun. There's no real reason in 162 games to be playing 13, 14, 15 innings. It doesn't, I'm not sure who it serves, you know, to be playing that long. It's not entertaining. Yeah. If the ghost runner helps, I'm happy for it to stick around. Like the doubleheader, the seven inning doubleheaders. I mean, that's just not baseball. We play nine innings. Get over it. That's, you know, we have to do. The universal DH, like Josh, I would have loved to see it stick around, but it just seems like there's more people now who want it than people who don't want it. And even though I will miss the strategy piece, as Josh rightly pointed out, sometimes you just have to step aside. I think that if you went back a few years, it might have been different. That there were more people that wanted, you know, to keep the batter in the batter's box. But it looks like things have changed, and that's the war you lost. You pick up the pieces and you moved on, I'm afraid. You know?
I mean, it's fascinating the impact it's already had. I mean, Albert Pujols may not have found a home this year.
No chance.
For the DH in the National League and the Cardinals having nostalgia and bringing him back. So, you know, the one thing I will say, though, as a longtime baseball fan, is that those 15 inning games are something kind of really mesmerizing. I mean, you guys were there for the World Series game that went on, you know, I covered it too on site.
Don't even remind me.
There's something, there's like a morbid rubbernecking accident on the highway type of feel to it. That's actually kind of a little weird that you kind of enjoy those long games. Like, is it going to keep going? Can they keep going? You got the pitcher in left field. There's something fun to it. I still support the ghost runner, but there is something to it.
It is. I wouldn't disagree with you. It is a fun freak show the later it goes. But of course, must point out that when it comes to playoffs, we will be playing extra innings all the way through. So we will still have a little bit of that in the most dramatic points of the season, which is something to look forward to.
Okay, well, for the record, as if anybody's interested, I 100% agree with both of you regarding all the changes, and I'm not happy about the universal DH, but the point you make is a valid one, Dave. 2023 rule changes.
Yeah, and by the way, yeah, thanks for asking my input. That's fine. Continue. Yeah.
Oh, sorry, Eric. Did you have an input?
Yeah, I don't like universal DH. Moving on.
Okay, moving on. Okay. That's what I love about you, big guy. Concise and to the point.
No, 2023.
Very awkward now. Rule changes. Right. Well, if you were happy for the most part about 2022 changes, I don't think you're going to be happy 2023. Pitch clocks will be used. I know this is one you're going to hate, JC. A ban on defensive shift. An automatic ball strike zone will exist. I mean, when they say automatic, does that mean they're going to create a technical that will inform the umpire? Is that right? Yeah. Is that what they're saying? Right. Okay. And they're experimenting with larger bases. They're now talking about going ahead with that, which is supposedly about helping players steal. I'm not sure if it'll have that big a difference, but anyway. So, JC, I know you're going to hate the ban on the defensive switch.
I do. Shift. I hate it because, it runs counter to my philosophy, right? Like, you just allowing – I love the idea of allowing people to be innovative in the game. Yeah. And when you sort of literally box in fielders into a certain area – you're not being innovative. You're doing the exact opposite. And so, I'm supportive of that. And I know that a lot of players have said, well, you know, it makes it really hard. You know, I'm a pull hitter. And then people, when you respond to that, well, you know, learn how to you know, play to the whole field. They said, well, it's really hard when people are throwing 100 miles an hour. Baseball is all it's a game in which you have to react to changes yeah. and make modifications as a result of those changes. That is the beauty of the game. Yes, it's hard. Yes, it requires people changing, but that to me is what makes baseball so special, is that ability for the give and take. As someone makes a smart change in the way they approach the game, you now need to make a smart change. And it's hard and it's difficult, but that's what helps the sport grow.
Guys, I was watching game one for the Braves last night, because we're obviously recording this podcast on the Friday, against the Reds. And I think it was Ozzie Albies who tried to lay down a bunt because they had the shift on him. So he's trying to adapt, and he's trying to put the ball where clearly the players aren't. I'm with you 100% on that one. I think that's crazy. I don't understand the point of that, other than well, playing into the
hand. Because Dave and I were discussing the other day, but what Bobby Valentine's
over
idea.
Over a Thai food lunch we had.
Oh, yes, yeah. But
was that the lunch I wasn't invited to?
Yes.
Okay.
Basically, we were talking about Bobby Valentine had an idea about the shift. Yeah.
Okay, what was that?
Let me pitch you on this, because Bobby, Bobby is a huge pain in the ass, but he knows a lot about baseball, and we love Bobby for that.
Great character, Bobby, former manager of the Mets, yeah.
Former manager of the New York Mets, former manager of the Boston Red Sox, the Texas Rangers, Chiba Lot Marines. He wore a mustache in the dugout after being ejected, famously or infamously. He had a couple of things that we're seeing sticking around now. First of all, many years ago, I spoke to him, and he was a big proponent of having expanded rosters in the beginning of the season, rather at the end, which makes a ton of sense. And now we are finally seeing that. So check one to Bobby. And the other thing I heard him say the other day, and this was very interesting, he said, you don't necessarily have to ban the shift. Why not give a team a certain number of times where they elect, based on strategy, that they can implement a shift, say 5 times a game. A manager has it in his back pocket where he can choose to bring in the shift. I like that, because it keeps the integrity of the shift alive, but it also recognizes that the shift, can't always be there, because it impacts on offense. What do you guys think of that? A little, 5 times a game, something like that?
Yeah, I love it. I love it because, again, it's, strategy, when you put on a limit on it, makes it even more enhanced, right? So, you have to really pick and choose your points. All of a sudden, it makes the manager more relevant in game time decisions, making that sort of decision. I think it'd be a lot of
fun. Save it for the ninth. Do you want to, maybe there's one player you need to focus on in the lineup that you try to take out of the game?
The winch factor will be huge. I can just hear Joey Gallo already whining that, like, oh, they only shift on me, my 4 at bats. But that's part of the game, right?
The other thing about the banning of the shift, which is would be a benefit of the game, is was pointed out by Theo Epstein in an interview that I heard with him, which I'd like to talk about a little more as we go through these changes. Is that you start to see more spectacular defense. We have these great shortstops, and we have some second basemen who are more challenged than others defensively. And all of a sudden, they're forced to go back into that range, which maybe they haven't been able to use as much because they've been shifting. Now they're making more spectacular plays, better for the viewer, better for the consumer of baseball, bodies flying around. More of that if there's no shift, and that's something you could look forward to or argue for.
I don't know if you saw Jonathan India's defensive play in game one last night, Braves Reds. Pretty spectacular. Yeah, I know. Well, see if you can see the highlights. Really spectacular. I think it was Ozzie again. Ozzie Albies got the out. Looked like it was a hit every day of the week. Great defense. What about the other two, the other three that I mentioned? Pitch clocks. Yes or no?
Again, these are changes for 2023, not be implemented this year, but next season.
For next season.
Yeah. And I'm okay with the clock. I'm okay with trying to speed it up a little bit. I don't think it will have the appreciable effect that they're hoping for.
I disagree with that.
Well, they do something similar in golf.
Well, and they've done this in the minor leagues as well too. This is
and it has had a big impact in the minor leagues, Josh. I mean, they've shaved like 20 minutes off games, 20, 30 minutes off games. And what they saw was the first 3 weeks, it took some adjusting time. And I think there was an Arizona Fall League game where the top prospect in baseball was called out on strikes because he was out of the box. And, you know, that's the kind of thing that happens early on when people are trying to figure this stuff out. But three or four weeks into it, games were really moving. And, you know, the game was just better and pitchers worked faster, got into a better rhythm. And also it affected the strikeout rate. Fewer strikeouts. You have pitchers who, you know, work slower, get more time to wait, to catch their breath, and can go more max power on every delivery. If you're working regularly to a clock, you can't do that. So it's going to help the ball be in play more and get a more of a rhythm to the game. So I'm all about that.
It's interesting that it's often been said that the role of a pitcher is to upset rhythm. That's really what their goal is. And there are multiple ways to do that, right? The biggest way and probably the purest way is throwing different speed pitches. So, you know, you throw your fastball, you throw your changeup, you know, you might throw the cutter, all different speeds, and that upsets rhythm. But another way that pitchers have been able to do that is by slowing down their delivery, taking time, changing their delivery a little bit, the slide step. That's a way to upset rhythm. This will have a little impact on that, but maybe it emphasizes the pure way of upsetting rhythm, which is the pitches you throw.
Just picking
I
up
can't
on
wait.
The,
I think it's very exciting. I really do. I think that we're on the verge of some major rule changes that are going to have a serious impact on the game, the way it's played in a good way. I think this is the last season for kind of the baseball that the game has morphed into in the past 20 years, which is a slow, plodding sport with less action. I think we're on the verge of a breakthrough.
I've just got to pick up on the automatic ball strike zone that will exist from 2023. I loathe the idea of undermining the authority of any umpire, particularly the home plate umpire, but I am a fan of this. I was whinging like crazy last night when Max Fried was throwing some absolute corkers on the edges that are clearly, according to that, the, you know, the strikeout box that they put up on the screen, he was catching the edges and he just never got any of the calls. And it had a massive impact on his game. And in the end, he ended up giving up 5 runs and we lost the game. And I actually tweeted, how many strikes is this home plate umpire going to miss? And I think it was UK Rays fan, who's a big fan of the podcast and a great follower of what we do. He said, not a fan of instant replay in any sport, but when it's a matter of fact and not opinion, like goal line technology, which of course they've changed in football, then it's a no-brainer. Surely an automated strike zone is a no-brainer. So I think there is a lot of support out there. Do you guys agree?
I'm very ambivalent about this. Because one of the things when I was growing up, when I was a player, which is, I don't mind if the umpire zone is different from umpire to umpire, as long as it's consistent for that umpire. And right. Part of the game is that interplay, right? Which is, this guy has a wide strike zone. I need to know that. I need to, as a catcher, be able to play to that strike zone. It was sort of just an interesting additional facet that I liked. And I like the human element of sport. But you're right, Goldie. I mean, on some level, you know, we have Hawkeye and tennis, and there's a value to that. So.
Wait, I got to pitch you on this, guys, because there's something else I heard. There's a third option, and this is being experimented with in minor league baseball this year as well. Let the umpire make the call, and then you get a few challenges a game on really bad, you know, when it's really, you know, grossly outside, inside, you get a few challenges a game, and the umpire can hear instantaneously if he was right or wrong. So you can make that, you can get your, so the umpire is making his calls, but if he really blows a pitch, you have X number of challenges, whether it be 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then you can call it. I think that's the best of both worlds again.
And do you know what I like about that, Dave? You're probably only going to call the one that's like the third strikeout, which is the, you know, that's going to remove the batter from out of the game. Yeah. So
again, and also the speed in which you get the answer is important too.
Does anybody have
know instantly because it just goes into
that's
the umpire's
agree.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want to slow the game down having speeded it up with every other.
Can I rewind to changes this year that we didn't mention? There's one that I think was really important, which is that the way service time is being calculated for rookies and the way you are able to do that was changed this year. And it allows for certain high-end rookies not to be stashed on minor league rosters and sort of forces them to bring them up early. So we're seeing Bobby Witt Jr. on opening day, Spencer Torkelson on opening day. And I think that that's a great change because part of the big issue with baseball was that, you know, these younger players, you know, were being kind of manipulated, only coming in a half a season. You get them from opening day and get a full season out of these
guys. Get the talent in the game.
Yeah.
And here, and one more rule change that I don't see on our list is PitchCom was made officially legal by Major League Baseball in the days running up to the regular season. And I also think that that's going to speed up the game and bring a pace to it. No longer having to worry about what happens when a runner gets on second base, all the sign stealing that goes on, all the nonsense that goes on. Just here's my pitch, throw it. You don't have to sit there and wait for him to put down his these are precious seconds. They add up. And yeah, there's no reason now to be able to, you know, in 2022, NFL's been doing this for 20 years, call plays.
Just to clarify what you're talking about, Dave, because not everyone might know what you were saying, which is that it's now going to be able to, through technology, electronically have communication between the catcher and the pitcher in order for them to be able to trade signs without having to show it and have signs.
Correct. And that, I just think that's there's a couple of these innovations, guys. I'm really excited. I think it's going to, the game is changing right now.
You're not easy to be excited, are you, Dave? Let's be brutally honest. Okay, let's move it on. Larger bases, we haven't bothered with. To be honest, I don't think it'll make a massive difference.
Is it going to be a big difference? First of all, it's not 90 feet between bases, as we all think. It's actually 88.5. And the bases, I think it's going to go down to like 87 or 86. And that, look, that's the difference. There's going to be more. I know I made fun of the base thing last year, but the fact of the matter is there's going to be more risk-taking on the bases, more action. Love it.
Okay. Well, I would also like to point out that I think it'll probably be safer. We see so many ankle injuries when players are running to first and, you know, and it's going to be a close call. I hope that with a bigger base, there's going to be less falling off and twisting of ankles. So that definitely is a good thing. Okay, let's move it on. It's time for Badoo Watch for those listeners from previous seasons. Yeah, absolutely.
Where is
it? It's flying. Okay. A View to a Kill. As you remember, one of our listeners very kindly gave us that name, Akil Badu, the legend that is the Detroit youngster who we took to in a big way. You want to follow somebody else, Eric? There's a rumor.
Well, I mean, yes, Akil Badu last year was a very good story. He came out of nowhere. He was 3 home runs a game kind of thing, and you know, grand slam on his debut. What's not to like, and all that kind of stuff. But no, hey, I'm wishing Akil Badu all the best for this season. He'll be
3 starting. Home runs in spring training, buddy.
What's that?
He hit 3 home runs in spring training.
It's not bad, you know. It's a
not but bad.
What I'm saying is, yes, we've given Akil Badu.
We need to find diamonds in the rough. Right?
The limelight he deserves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So, who are you thinking of instead?
Well, I'm thinking Spencer Torkelson, who, as Josh said, he's now going to be the starting first baseman.
Yeah, he's a blue chipper. We don't do blue chippers on this show.
But none of us are blue chippers. I think because there was a very emotional moment where Miguel Cabrera is going to actually hand over the realm, the throne of first base, which he held for so long at Detroit, to the newbie Spencer Torkelson, the number one draft pick. But he has a problem.
Another Detroit Tiger.
Well, you know, hey.
Yeah, this is hometown cooking right here. Yeah,
the only thing stopping me from doing a Spencer Torkelson watch is try making a witty rhyming pun with Spencer Torkelson. At least a View to a Kill was easy, but
the obvious way to handle this is to ask our listeners who they want us.
Yeah, because they're witty and intelligent, Eric. So they may actually come up with something.
Jesus,
so
cool
should
me.
We continue?
Turn it down from 11, bro. To a kill,
but let me just tell you something. No, here's how we're going to do it. Because you don't pick Spencer. You don't pick Badu. You don't pick Torkelson. These guys pick you. We started following Badu because he did something special as an unknown.
Good point, though.
We have to wait for the next person to step up and pick us. So what we should be doing is we should be looking for who the next Badu is going to be over these next few weeks, and then we should stick with that person. They
so can
us.
We
don't
until so Dave, until that happens, can we stick with our dear friend Akil?
Yes.
Thank you.
But okay.
Can
I make a friendly amendment, which is we should still ask the listeners to make recommendations and offer up candidates.
Nah, screw them.
Oh my God, you're anti-listener. I can't believe you. We have like 5 listeners and you hate the listeners. How could
Eric Jansen, the Stalin of our show.
Oh, it's just more work for me.
Who's worse, Jansen, Stalin, or Hitler?
Hit that bell quickly.
Moving on.
Right, Manitou's up. This is assuming we're still allowed to broadcast. Biggest off-season moves. So, guys, you've got to pick one or two that have caught your eye. It goes without saying, I'm obviously going to go with Freddie and the Kenley Jansen Doric swap between the Braves and the Dodgers. But also, Miles are coming. I really think that's a great piece of business. I'm heartbroken, genuinely, that Freddie is no longer with us. But once it was going to happen, I think what they did, what the backroom staff at Atlanta did, was stunning. When you consider he's 4 years younger, apparently his...
Are you talking about Matt Olson? Are you going
to
name
him? Yeah,
that
I'm talking about Matt Olson, yeah. I mean, you know, we've got extra 4 years. I think we've signed him to a six-year deal. And he is an Atlanta homegrown boy. He's beside himself with excitement. He's looked like he's on fire in spring training. He looks like he's absolutely ready to rock and roll. Apparently, I think it was Snitz was talking about how the dynamic of his personality is fitted in perfectly because we had such a happy ball club. At least that's how it came across, and that was a big part of the success they had and the resilience they showed last season.
Hopefully,
so
he won't rub the eye black off Acuna's face like Freddie Freeman did.
Well, I've been hearing this. I've not seen the detail of this, but they were discussing it on the game last night, and that both Acuna and Freddie now are slightly backtracking, and Freddie's saying that, you know, we were good and we were fine. I mean, what's the full story on this?
The full story is the Atlanta Braves had certain rules. And when Acuna was a rookie, Freddie Freeman apparently took it upon himself to help enforce Atlanta Brave clubhouse rules. And Acuna didn't like that none too much. And apparently has held something of, I wouldn't call it a grudge, but, you know, something that's been in the back of his mind for some time. And you know, look, you have dynamic players who don't necessarily love each other. You know, I think as fans, a lot of times we like to believe that all of our favorite players love each other and you go into the clubhouse and it's kumbaya. But that's not how it is. A lot of these guys are professionals, check in, check out, not best friends off the field. And that's fine also. You know, they used to say the Red Sox, what was it? 25 players, 25 cabs. You know, they used to say that. We also know that the dynasty of the Oakland A's won three World Series between 72 and 74. They hated each other. The Yankee, you know, there is something that a little tension sometimes helps in a clubhouse too. So,
but if you're talking about the Braves, surely, and JC back me up on this, the dynamic of that team, particularly in the second half of the season and particularly during the postseason, they did look like a team that were pulling for each other, showed enormous resilience when times got tough. You know, and you've got Acuna sitting in the dugout throughout, despite the fact that he had his ACL injury. You know, they seemed a really tight bunch.
Yeah, I mean, I believe it was Kyle Schwarber who said it in the offseason, which is talent gets you through the regular season, chemistry wins World Series. That is true to a certain extent. Yeah. I mean, there are examples, right? There are examples that I've mentioned, the Bronx Zoo, right? The Yankees in the 70s were a team that was completely dysfunctional. Yet sometimes that's a form of chemistry too, right? You hate your teammates so much that you want to do well and just shove it for that, you know?
Yeah, Reggie Jackson, them. I mean, my God.
So, you know, I think there are different, chemistry presents itself in different ways. But I do agree that one way is, you know, everyone rowing in the same direction.
Plus, don't forget, Johnny, nobody accused, Acuna didn't accuse Freeman or vice versa of being unprofessional or not pulling
just,
for each
He just
other.
Said that we
they
weren't the best
weren't
of mates.
Great. Yeah, that's all. I mean, you know, so it doesn't surprise me that I think that they would pull for each other in the dugout because they're both great professionals.
But guys, are we unanimous that Olsen was a great pickup?
Enough about the Braves.
Give me a thumbs up. No, I want a thumbs up from everybody. Olsen was a great pickup.
Terrific pickup.
That's all I needed to hear. Okay, Dave, who's your move that you want to note and reference?
Well, look, as a Mets fan, it's a no-brainer, isn't it? The fact that we now have ownership that's willing to go out and spend and break the bank and break the luxury tax if necessary, break that glass and bring Max Scherzer in here, a guy who I never really liked. You know, especially as a member of the Washington Nationals, but look, you know, we'll see. He had that dead arm last year towards the end of the season. I'll be interesting to see how he picks up this season. Obviously it's a huge acquisition. Now it doesn't help as much if Jacob DeGrom, you know, can't give you the kind of contribution you'd expect from the best pitcher in all of baseball. So we will see, you know, if it's all for naught, but look,
But you know his salary is bigger than the whole of the Oakland A's entire salary.
Yeah. I mean, look, this is, one of the things that the lockout did not solve for is the haves and the have nots. We still haven't closed that gap. And I'm not sure that this is the agreement that will, or if it will ever happen in baseball.
Are the Mets spending more than the Dodgers?
The Mets Anybody are spending know? The, as far as I know, the Mets are spending the most in Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think they've overtaken. No. The Dodgers were top of the pile last season. So, and the Yankees are not number one and haven't been for a couple of seasons. So, I think you're right in saying the Mets now spend more money on their waste bill than any other team. So, when you fail again, by God, that's going to be embarrassing. JC, moving on. What about you? Yeah. What's your pickup?
Yeah, mine isn't necessarily the best pickup, but to me, it was the most interesting pickup, which was the Colorado Rockies signing Chris Bryant for, I think it was around $180 million, something like that.
Yeah.
And it was just so perplexing on a number of levels. First, with that money, they could have kept a homegrown player like Nolan Arenado or Trevor Story, maybe even almost getting to covering them both if they had to lock them in early enough. And here they are going after a player who has been fantastic at points in his career, has some versatility from position standpoint, yeah, but is not going to be a difference maker, and they're not on the cusp. And you start to wonder, well, the Monfort family is just they're strange ownership. There are a number of strange ownership. I like the Ricketts, and, you know, in Chicago and so forth.
The guy in Pittsburgh.
But this one made no sense to me. And so, in a sense, I'm happy for Rockies fans that they're going to have some sort of star on the team. They also invested a lot of money in Ryan McMahon to play third base for them. So, but I just don't see it. So it was interesting. And you wonder if this is a reflection on some degree that with this new collective bargaining agreement, the teams are a little more willing to kind of step out. But then you look at the A's or the Pirates, and they're still in tanking mode, the Orioles. So hopefully this is a sign that more teams are willing to spend a little, but befuddling interest to me, just an interesting pickup.
Okay, guys, it looks like the Dodgers actually are still on top. They're 20, at least with their 2022 payroll, Dodgers, $285.5 million. And the Mets, $255.9 million, which is my bar tab at the club, by the way.
So it's only a matter of time,
by the way, before Steve Cohen, eclipses the Dodgers, but it's not yet. And we should point that out.
That could only happen to the Mets. You think you're top, but you weren't. What a surprise. You think you're going to win the NL East. Guess what? You ain't. The Braves are.
Same old Mets.
Okay, well, let's ask Eric his opinion, even though I'm not even sure the Detroit Tigers made any pickups. And from what I understand, the Montreal Expos don't exist anymore and never will do again.
The only thing I got is Detroit, where they brought in Austin Meadows from Tampa Bay.
That's a good pickup. That's a great pickup.
I like Austin Meadows.
I'm a big fan.
I mean, that's fine.
I honestly like the Tigers team.
Would you call him?
Yeah, I like Eduardo Rodriguez. Casey Mize is a good pitcher. And offensively, they have some interesting pieces.
I'm predicting the Tigers having a 500-plus season.
Wow.
Okay, but would you say that first? You wouldn't call the Austin Meadows move to Detroit a blockbuster move, would you? Come on.
It's all perspective. For the Tigers, you coming to town and having a beer is a blockbuster move.
Sure. Now, Goldie, the
what has that radio done to you, dude? I'm a little worried. Is your therapist know you're here?
Who's that famous radio presenter in America?
He's big-timing us now. That's what's going on. He's big-timing us.
You're all fools.
Let me...
The next song, Bob O'Reilly by the Who.
Who is that radio presenter that, you know, he's just really very funny? Yeah, that's the one. That's what's happened.
You're still our Alan Partridge. speaking of moves or non-moves, since we were last on air, can I still say that with podcasts? The Tampa Bay Rays will not be moving to Montreal. They were not going to be doing that split season thing. That died a death in the offseason. Because of COVID and because of the CBA and because of other things, it'll be a long time before we see any Major League Baseball in the city of Montreal, my former beloved hometown.
But it's not dead. It's not dead. Sternberg could still move that team there.
No one else helping the city of Montreal itself. The infrastructure is falling apart. The mayor is a bozo, and just nothing's working in Montreal. So there won't be any major
expansion. Expansion's still going to happen, though. I mean, it probably won't be to Montreal, but they've got to get to 16 teams in each league.
No one's gonna pay for a stadium there. And
what do you think, Vegas, and Nashville?
I think
I'd be okay with Nashville.
Portland's still a possibility, I think. Maybe. Yeah.
Portland, well, Oregon.
Any other,
it looks
any
like
other
Vegas is inevitable, right? Yeah, I mean, everybody wants a team in Vegas.
Vegas is certain. I agree. But yeah.
Let's stay on topic. Other big moves in the offseason, Johnny?
Yeah, well, Robbie Ray, who had a season the likes of which nobody anticipated last season, moves to Seattle. I mean, that's an interesting. And let's face it, that's a pitcher's park. So, I was seeing in, sorry to mention it for the first time on the podcast, but in fantasy baseball drafts, Robbie Ray was up there like top 20.
But you know, the thing is, it is a pitcher's park, but Robbie Ray's problems when he's had problems has been control.
Yeah,
throwing strikes, walking too many people, and then having to come back into the zone in the middle of the zone and giving up home runs. So, you know, I'm not sure necessarily that translates as much as for him. It'll be interesting to see whether he had just one magic season or whether this is the new Robbie Ray, because he has struggled, you know, a lot.
Yeah. Tell me about it.
I think the Rangers did. Well, they spent a lot.
Oh, yeah. They spent a lot of money. Seager. Yeah.
Seager. Simeon, right?
Yeah. Simeon is a great pickup. I love that guy. Tremendous.
Well, and it's not like Toronto was just a seller. They brought in Kevin Gausman, who had a great season with the Giants last year. But Toronto, whole different ballpark when it comes to, you know, going from a pitcher's park to a hitter's park. So,
keep in mind that the Giants stadium had changed a little bit last year, where they changed the configuration and made it a little bit more offensive neutral instead of just pure pitcher's park.
Yeah, and the other thing I would worry about if I'm a Blue Jays fan is, you know, the Giants has become kind of a center for reclamation projects. So, you know, Gausman leaving the Giants organization, where they've been able to do some really good things with pitchers, that worries me a little bit, actually. We'll see what he does when he gets into Toronto.
Guys, I apologize up front that I've got to bring this up because it is a baseball story. Trevor Bauer stays in L.A., the fiasco continues. My understanding, and I'm interested, JC, because you're the man with a legal training here. From a legal perspective, my understanding is he is not going to be charged with anything. He is not deemed to have committed a criminal offense, what they're now saying. Where does that leave MLB? Where does that leave the Dodgers with regards to his contract?
Well, there's so many legal issues too, right? He filed a defamation suit against The Athletic and the reporter Holly Knight, which feels very frivolous to me.
Wow.
Just understanding public figures, and you need, you know, a certain level of, you know, malice that relates to those sort of cases. So I don't think he's going to win there. It doesn't matter, right? Major League Baseball has the ability to enforce in their own manner. And it's just so difficult with Bauer because he doesn't do himself any favors ever. I mean, this is a guy who just doesn't know how to say the right thing or to act with any sort of decorum. And so it makes you kind of root against him, and it makes it harder for Major League Baseball to allow him back into the fray, because when there's no, regardless of whether it's legal or not, when there's no sense of remorse for the actions and the feelings of other people, it's very difficult for forgiveness.
Do you agree, Dave?
I agree with everything Josh said. He does not do any favors for himself. He's extremely unlikable. But, you know, it just remains to be seen whether, you know, what Major League Baseball is going to do. I think they're in a very tough situation with Trevor Bauer because he's been cleared legally. But, you know, we've seen before that, you know, you don't necessarily need to be charged and have those charges hold up in order to receive discipline from Major League Baseball. So I don't know what's taking so long, to be honest. I think the MLB needs to, you know, whatever they're going to do, I think they need to just do it and move on.
Yeah. Head on the block, death no option. Will he play Major League Baseball again or not?
Oh, yeah.
I say yes. I don't think he'll be the pitcher he was. I mean, I think this time off.
Do you think he will, his career will restart?
Yeah, I just don't think it'll be the same career. I mean, to the extent that he comes back somewhere.
Goodbye,
Sonny. He'll be back.
Now, before we move on to the next, just quickly rattle off one other major move that we haven't mentioned is Carlos Correa to the Minnesota Twins. Now, why is that important? Because I think we were underappreciating the best infield in baseball, I will say, because of course it was tarnished with the sign stealing, all this. That Astros infield is now slowly being
dismantled.
Wow. And with Carlos Correa now leaving that Houston infield. So that's,
I mean, this slowly being dismantled suggests that there are other shoes to drop. I mean, I don't think Bregman and Altuve are going anywhere. Or the
no, shoes. Exactly. And
they can't pay all of them. That's the thing.
That's the thing. Yeah. But moving on.
Okay, batter number three is up in the batter's box, and it's predictions. This is obviously where we all embarrass ourselves. I say that at the end of September, but I think rewinding a year, I pretty much nailed every single prediction, but we'll move on swiftly.
I would love to hear the tape on that. I would love.
Well, the beauty is nobody will ever listen to it, so I could say that with complete confidence.
It's still available on YouTube.
Is it? Actually, I think I was pretty good. I think I got most of them. Right, let's start in the AL, first of all. JC, East, Central, West. Who are you going for?
I mean, I feel bad because there's so obvious front runners in most of these divisions, the Blue Jays in the East, the Central being the White Sox. But I'm going to go with a dark horse, a modest dark horse in the West, in the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
Oh, wow.
I think if Noah Syndergaard reclaims some of his form, you got Otani, and you have a healthy Mike Trout, you have a healthy Anthony Rendon. I think that that's a team that actually could really play this year. So they're my dark horse there.
But you're going Toronto in the East and you're going White Sox in the Central.
Yeah. And okay. Angels in the West.
And Angels in the West. Dave.
Jays. I think that they're really on the verge of something extremely exciting with that organization. They're dynamic. They're so much fun. Really excited to see what's going to happen with them. AL Central is going to essential cakewalk for the White Sox again. 162 playoff tune-up. We'll see if they can get beyond the first round. And then in the West, you know, it's going to be the Astros. I would love to see the Angels compete, as baseball neutrals, you know, worldwide want to see these, you know, these Trouts and Otanis, you know, do their thing in the playoffs. We all want that. Everybody wants that. So I'd love to see it. But right now, I think it's still the Astros division. They've won it 5 out of the last 6 years, and it's going to be 6 or 7.
Eric.
Well, you know what I'm going to go for? Because this is the kind of stuff that if it pans out, I'm a genius. And if it doesn't, I'm just my usual idiot. I'm going to say AL East Orioles, AL Central Detroit, AL West Seattle. So hey.
Seattle.
You're first.
Seattle, I could see that.
We'll get the last laugh at the end of September.
Seattle were the luckiest team in baseball last year. They won, I think, 16 more games than they should have based on their Pythagorean win-or-loss total.
I just really want to know your thought process on the Orioles. Is it just because,
no one else will pick them, so I might as well. If somehow by some miracle they do win the AL East, goes, oh my God, Eric called it way back in April.
Eric, do you have Kazakhstan to win the World Cup?
Can I point out, they've got this whole conversation on record, so they can all hear you saying, look, I know it's rubbish, but hey, I'll look a genius if I'm right.
Through deep analysis, it's...
Okay.
Moving on.
Okay. Hey, hang on, I haven't given my tips.
Oh, yeah, okay, go on.
And then nice and quick, you're going to hear something you've probably never heard before. I 100% agree with Big Dave. I'm going Blue Jays, I'm going White Sox, and I'm going Astros. Okay,
that's
moving on.
That's so easy. That's just the pat.
What do you want from
for, for some of us, being right is easy.
Mine's more inspired.
Move on. National League. East, Central, West. JC.
I'm going to go with Dave's Mets. I think that they've got the money to fill it out. I kind of like the Phillies, to be honest. I know their pitching is very questionable, but that lineup is sexy. In the Central, I know everyone's going to go with the Brewers. That pitching rotation is dominant. But because I don't want to be obvious, I'm actually going with the Cardinals. Again, I like their offense. I think Tyler O'Neill is just a
star. But what about Flaherty's hurt again?
Yeah, I was about to say that the big issue is that Flaherty needs to come back. Wainwright, he had a great opening outing. And I think that, if he has a great season. Yeah. But he's not going to throw shutouts every time out there. But if he can be useful, Flattery throws well. I like their offensive lineup. I think that they could be a surprise.
And what was that stat that Wainwright threw to Molina for the 300? Is it 305 times they've been batting together? That's incredible. Go ahead, Josh.
And then for the West, I just, it's impossible to get around the Dodgers. I think they're just such an obvious pick.
Yep. Okay. Dave?
Well, I have the Braves. I do agree that their acquisition of Matt Olson was really incredible. Unfortunately, they picked up Kenley Jansen, who I love, and who I've had always in my fantasy team. I hate to bring up fantasy baseball, of course, but I didn't even know what to do since I can't draft Braves. I have a no Brave policy on my team. And they picked up Colin McHugh as well. So very aggressive management by the Braves, and I like that. I think that, you know, Freddie could break down sooner than later. I wouldn't wait. The Mets, we know they're the Mets. I'm never going to pick them. That's like cursing myself. The Brewers, again, like Josh said, tremendous rotation and also a lot of fun as well. And out West, it is the Dodgers. I would love to see San Diego, who continue to tinker with their franchise. They traded Chris Paddock yesterday, which would have been Thursday, as we're recording on Friday. Unfortunately, with Fernando Tatis out of the lineup for 3 months, I think that's going to be too much to overcome. And we'll see about the Giants. A lot of career seasons last year. You know, no Posey. Crawford was ridiculous last year out of nowhere. I want to see what he does again this year.
So, Eric, you going with the Pirates?
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to
call Eric.
I'm going to pick the Marlins in the East just because Derek Jeter.
I like
left.
The Marlins. Yeah,
Derek Jeter was a fly in the ointment there, so he's left their management team. For the Central, NL Central, I want to go with the Brewers, but I think if the Cincinnati Reds don't do anything this season, that's it. They're gonna be cellar dwellers for the next 5 years. So this is the last chance for Cincinnati to do anything plausible playoffs wise. And the NL West, well, what the hell? I'll go for Colorado just because none of
love it.
Oh, geez.
Okay, guys. Well, very quickly, my view on this, and I am actually going to step outside my comfort zone. Any discussion in NL East about any team winning other than the Braves is a nonsense. They're even stronger this year than they were last year, and last year they won the World Series, in case you can't remember. So Braves to win the East. In the Central, I am stepping out of my comfort zone. Just like Eric, I 100% agree with you. I think this is the one season the Reds might just do it. I loved what I saw yesterday. Joey Votto, great Canadian stock. As long as he stays healthy, because he's about 104 years old, I think they've got the lineup, and I particularly like the way their ace pitched last night. As for the West, I'm also going to step out of my comfort zone. There's no way I can predict the Dodgers, no matter how good they are. I actually think that the Padres, with Tatis injured, no one's expecting them to achieve this year, whereas last season everyone was going, oh, it's the Padres or the Dodgers, and I think that got to them. I really think that got to them. This season they're under the radar. I'm going to go for the Padres in the West. Padres in the West, Braves in the East, and the Cincinnati Reds in the Central. You heard it here first.
Yeah. All right. Speaking of the Reds, have you guys seen Joey Votto's TikTok? Oh my God.
No. You're on TikTok. You're on TikTok, John?
No, I'm on Twitter, and then I saw TikTok,
they pick it up. So, okay.
And it's insane. He does this little like mimic dance thing. It's pure crazy Joey Votto. It's fantastic. I encourage all our listeners to find it.
So that's your picks, well, our picks of this year. And just bear in mind that if you use my picks as an accumulator, that'll be very high odds and very unlikely. So there you go.
And a waste of money.
Yeah, $1 bet on Eric's picks will earn you $3.5 trillion if you get it.
That's the whole point. Moving on.
Okay, we're into the seventh inning stretch. For those YouTubers out there, join us, give it a shake. There we go. We're all getting a bit old. Moving on swiftly. This is obviously where we hand over the mic and the baton to our Canadian brother, Mr. Eric Jansen. Baseball book of the week.
Now, bear with me here. In the off season, there's somebody, an American guy who lives in my neighborhood, went up to me and we were talking about baseball books. And he couldn't believe that I'd never owned Bill James's historical baseball abstract. And it's one thing I've had every other James, Bill James books on my bookshelf. And it's, I don't know why this eluded me, his historical baseball abstract. And I read it and I was so angry with myself thinking, why did I wait so long to have this as part of my collection? So that's my baseball book of the week, Bill James's historical baseball abstract. Not only is it informative, insightful, a must for every baseball reader. It's very handy to have while when you're sitting on the toilet.
Bill James has gotten very cranky lately. I don't know if you guys, if you've noticed, he's gotten very on Twitter. He's getting starting to get that rep as the cranky old man. I hope he. I loved Bill James.
So he'd be perfect this podcast.
He would.
Maybe like he could suffer Goldie every once in a while.
No, I'd like to apologize. I have been a bit cranky, and I don't know why. I just felt the need to try and.
It's okay. We're used to it. Moving on.
Baseball cultural reference. Have you got some awful song for me?
No, actually, I was gonna give you a baseball song, but we'll save that for our next show because I'm gonna try to find one that really annoys you. I decided to go down the movie route again, and it deals with Jeff Bridges. Now, for those who are watching on YouTube, I'm actually currently wearing an obscure Japanese baseball shirt. It's got a baseball caricature on it, and it's got baseball writing on it. And did you know that Jeff Bridges wore this exact same shirt of Karu Beto, who exactly is a Japanese player who played in the Japanese League from 1950 to 1957, wore glasses while playing, which is very unheard of in the 50s. And he was just he was an average, okay player, but a superstar in his own right because he was such a character of the game in Japanese baseball in the 50s. Now, a little Easter egg is that Jeff Bridges wore this exact same shirt in three of his films. It was like he wore one once really? In The Fisher King, once in an obscure movie called Cold Feet, nothing to do with the TV show, and once on The Big Lebowski. So if you're ever looking at any of those three films ever again, Big Lebowski, Cold Feet, or The Fisher King, look out for Jeff Bridges wearing the Kaoru Beto t-shirt. And hence where I found it online. So,
can I just clarify, that's not the exact t-shirt he wore. That's just a copy of the one they wore.
I don't have Jeff Bridges' number and he's a Senator.
That is a great story. The only part, though, is the glasses part. I mean, Don DiMaggio was a great player who wore glasses. It wasn't that
uncommon. Yeah, but not the Japanese League.
Well, I didn't follow the Japanese League in the 1950s.
You don't follow 70s Japanese baseball, Josh?
Yeah, that's outside of my portfolio.
That could be your next book.
There you go. Well, anyways, look it up, folks. I'll post it in Facebook and our usual media outlets and YouTube. Don't forget to check out our YouTube.
Before we close this section out, can I just make one observation? We often talk about baseball movies, and I argue every time I have a chat with friends of mine who have no interest in baseball, and I say, name me any sport that gets even close to baseball in terms of having great movies where that sport is the central core of the movie. It's off the charts. Baseball's in another. It's like they're on their own in the Premiership, and everyone else is in the Isthmian League by comparison.
Well, there's a reason for that because Hollywood was kind of the center of the movie making universe at the same time that baseball was.
You haven't let me finish, therefore I can't make my point. My point is, isn't it extraordinary that when you talk about one genre, one creative genre that is the movies, baseball is off the charts good. But then when you talk about the other genre, i.e. creative genre that is music, is songs, baseball songs are universally awful.
No, God.
That's not true.
That's not true.
Well, apart from Take Me Out of the Ballpark, I can't think of a single one.
What ballpark? There's no Take Me Out of the Ballpark.
There you go. There's proof of the pudding. I can't even remember the lyrics because it's so unmemorable.
That's a reflection of your senility, Goldie.
Moving on. So basically, that was my cultural movie reference that ties into baseball, or baseball tying into cultural movie references. Check it out, Jeff Bridges and Fisher King, Cold Feet, and The Big Lebowski. Now, time to end this trivia and put you guys out of your misery. I don't know if you had time to cogitate over the immaculate inning that I posed to you when I asked you which of these three pitchers have actually pitched the most immaculate innings. Was it A, Max Scherzer, B, Chris Sale, or C, Ken Lee Jansen? Ladies and gentlemen, who are you going to go for? Johnny Gould first.
Well, I'll go first because I don't have a clue. So I'm going to work on the basis that the most likely strikeout is a guy who's throwing high heat. I mean, obviously they all do, but I'm going to go with a closer. So I'm going with young Canley.
And of course, I wanted to go with Canley.
Well, you can't because I said
it first. You want.
Well, you can. You can say the same as me. We've already agreed our predictions in the American League.
But that's boring.
Okay. Then you'll have to go somewhere else.
I go with Chris Sale. As I always thought, it's going to be Chris Sale because Chris Sale is a great pitcher who throws a lot of heat.
Well, hang on. If you thought that, why are you suddenly arguing about Mr. Kennedy?
Well, I'm lying about that.
Oh, really?
Okay. Well,
I my thought process for this is of the three, the funkiest pitcher who, when he is nasty, is the nastiest, is Chris Sale because of his delivery is so funky. So if he gets it all together,
that's why he's hurt.
Unhittable. Yeah.
Probably. Okay. I've locked in your answers.
I hope it's Matt Scherzer. You know,
gonna be Scherzer.
The answer is that there actually have been three pitchers who have pitched a grand total of three immaculate innings. So one of them is Max Scherzer. The other one is Sandy Koufax.
I knew it was gonna be Koufax.
Another one is Chris Sale, which means Kenley Jansen was the only wrong answer.
I knew it. I knew it was going to be Chris Sale.
That was just a setup. You Canadians are meant to be nice.
I didn't tell you to pick him.
You know, I don't like Trudeau anymore. I used to love him. I don't think I like you anymore. I used to love you. What is happening to Canada?
What happened in the off season to you, Gouldie?
Wow, this
went down a dark
me, he just humiliated. Well,
he goes to Radio North Bath and he becomes a big time celebrity again. And he just, he knows everything.
Dave, there are no listeners. I'm not getting paid to do it. It's not the big time. Okay, it's a lovely bunch of lovely people.
That's what you want us to think. You're trying to pretend to be humble.
Do you treat them better than you treat us?
Well, I treat them. I treat them with love and respect. And do you know why? Because they treat me with love and respect back.
Jay-Z. Anyway, speaking of love and respect, just to put things in context, I was at the Home Run House at the Westfield Mall in Stratford here in London, and I bumped into Max Whittle of BT Sport fame and baseball here in the UK fame. Don't forget that if you're listening to this on a Saturday or Friday night, there is a get together at the Home Run House in Westfield Mall in Stratford for. You can watch many Major League Baseball games live over pitchers of beer or pitchers of soft drinks if you don't drink, Philly cheesesteaks. What's not to like? Moving on now to where do we go from here?
We go to the mailbag, Eric. Thank you for that direction. Guys, we've had a lot of Twitter action with the announcement that we are coming back. As you all know, I mistakenly told everybody it wasn't looking good, and it worked an absolute treat because loads of people said no, and so now we are coming back. It was an
you're so manipulative,
and here we are.
Yeah, absolutely. I just want to mention, I mean, nobody's really asking any questions, but there's been some wonderful tweets. Cole, who is at Orpington Dad, I remember the first games of the season, the theme would start with a voice saying, baseball is back. The coverage you guys gave us was second to none. So many great memories. Geoff Harvey, at Cake Tiger. I love that as a Twitter handle. At Cake Tiger. Do you like that, guys? He says, Geoff says, used to love the baseball on Channel 5. The chat between the hosts was a big part of watching the game and those unexpected breaks in play, which would mean cutting back to the studio when you weren't ready. Eating sandwiches in the bathroom.
No, good not sandwiches, Maltesers. You were the Malteser king.
I was the Malteser king. But Dave, we mentioned earlier in the show that Tony R put up that wonderful. Did you edit that, Eric? Was that your editing for the 10-year anniversary of the show?
Yeah, that was in 2007, which is scary because that's a long time ago.
Yeah, 2007. If you haven't seen it, guys, you've got to watch it. It's hilarious. Dave, there was footage of you and me when was it you and me? No, it was Josh. It was you and me when I got caught short and I was still in the toilet when we came out to the studio and I had to sort of slip into the side and, you know, and being the professional presenters we were, you didn't try and pretend it wasn't happening. Eric didn't go to a one shot to allow me to get my seat. I was on a wide. Everybody saw it. You referenced it.
Absolutely. I think that's me. That sounds like me.
Yeah. I don't think that was me.
Was that
I don't
you?
Know. I don't think I was in that video even. I think you're just remembering a moment.
Yeah. See, how many years did you do in total on Channel 5 Baseball?
I was the longest running of the pundits. I think I did it for 5.5 years because I replaced David for a part of a summer because he was still doing ESPN stuff.
Yeah.
So, and I did the first half of the 2003 season before I went to law school.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think it was 5.5. But then when I wasn't doing it, I did the World Series and Eric and I had to do spring training stuff. So I think I was involved with the show for 8 years.
But the point you make is a valid one. You were involved with the show as a pundit for longer years than anyone else, longer than Toto, longer than Dave, and yet you appear in that highlights that Eric edited, and it makes out that you, you know, with Brett Berish did a couple of months.
Yeah. Well, I think it's reflective of how beloved I am, which is not.
Let's talk to the executive producer and ask him about his editing decisions.
No, in defense of Eric, because I was on the show at the time, so it was a retrospective of the other people who were no longer on the show.
And we saw it a few more seasons from that after that.
Gouldy, I know this will be hard for you to swallow, but like my ego was not bruised by that. I know that would have been something you would have been whinging about for like 6 years, but whatever, you know.
I haven't now it's finally is now we're at the end of the show. I haven't used this waffle much, by the way, even though I should have been wielding it a lot earlier, but it's been a for the first show I didn't do the waffle thing too often.
We had a lot of catch up.
Hey, and guys, you know, we should be proud of what we did on Channel 5, and I hope you guys are proud because you were amazing. And it is the 25 year anniversary since Channel 5 Baseball
went on air back
in 1997, 25 years ago. Old. We were young.
Looking at that video is insane. I mean, we all look good. As I told David before this, what really hit home for me is how much David loves his sideburns. They were a little thicker back then. They're now kind
I'll tell you what, you know, it's very, what people don't realize about sideburns is they're very hard to maintain. So I figured out a year ago, I figured out that if you just start here and trace, you can be pretty accurate.
This is a podcast. Here is
the new, for all those people who are, we can go into sideburn maintenance if you want.
Guys, before we close this out, because this is meant to be the mailbag section, Richard at Get Into Cine, he says, I got a good feeling about the Red Sox this year. He said the same last year, and it was oh so close. Do you think the Red Sox have got a chance of winning the AL East?
Nah. Absolutely. Moving on.
Absolutely.
Hey, listen, we got to end this because I have my therapy appointment in 6 minutes.
Okay.
And after speaking with you guys, I know what we're going to be covering.
Guys, this is probably going to be the longest podcast in the history of baseball podcasts, but you know what? It was worth every second. I apologize for being Mr. Cranky, but I want you also to know that I absolutely love getting together with you guys. And if it is only once a month, that is better than nothing. So thank you to each and every one of you for taking part.
Right back at you, Goldie.
Anytime, Johnny, except for the other 3 weeks of the month.
The biggest thanks of all to all our listeners returning for four people that are incapable of getting together more than once a month. Thank you for joining us on the Johnny and Josh Show. Don't forget to get involved on social media, the Twitter, the Facebook site, hit the like button, all that pointy at the bottom. We will have an announcement about the Fantasy Baseball Pod. We are hoping to do it again this year behind home plate. I will announce that across the Twitter feed, so keep an eye out for that. And don't forget, of course, to check out our stablemate, the Nat Coombs Show at the NC Show, who does great business. And our thanks, as always, to Nat for being a part, allowing us to be a part of his stable. But that's it from us. Am I leaving everybody with a song, Eric? Have you done that this week or not?
No, we'll do that next show.
Okay.
Why don't you hum us out, Gouldy? Hum us a song.
You know, just because the script says JG sums up, thanks and goodbye. See you next week, and we'll leave you with this song.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Keep the volume. With that, in out of tune from us on the Johnny and Josh Show podcast. Thank you for listening. Take care, guys. Until next time. Bye-bye. Oh, shut up.
Play ball!